Hello.
Hey, Taj Mahal.
Yeah, man.
This is Dom Flemons, the American Songster. I got a new podcast I'm doing. I was wondering if you'd like to be a part of it.
Yeah, this is great, man. Sure, I'll be glad to be in, man.
Cool. Yeah, we're just here in the studio. Got it. Everybody here all hooked up.
Well, what do we got to do?
Well, we're going to just turn the dial and we're going to get right to it.
Okay, cool.
Hello, folks. From North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC, this is American Songster Radio. I'm Dom Flemons. From the familiar and old-fashioned to the strange and surprising, this new podcast is a fresh listen to the sounds of America's past. Today on the show, I speak with the legendary Taj Mahal about his journey from a dairy farm in Massachusetts to the center of the folk music revival. He and I both share a love for the banjo and its complicated history.
So banjo for me was really an instrument that I did not like. All the pictures and caricatures, the blackface minstrels, really basically seemed to be degrading. But the instrument itself, there was something about it. It would rattle in my bones, man, and I would go like, tone, it sounds, wonder what else it could do.
A little later in the show, I play you a song with the help of my good friend, Big Head Joe, the giant six-string banjo.
Oh, make me one pallet on your floor. Make me one pallet on your floor. Oh, make a pallet soft and low. Won't you make it so your man will never know.
And not only that, I'll play in addition to Big Head Joe, another one of the oldest instruments that I keep in my collection, an instrument called the quills, which are a little panpipe instrument. So they're reeds going from big to small, and they get a bunch of different tones. But I'll play them for you so you can check them out. More of that song coming up, but first, a call to one of my heroes and yours, American music legend Taj Mahal. Well, I have with me my guest Taj Mahal, who is a world-renowned musician of every type of genre, almost the blues and jazz, R&B, string band music. Taj Mahal's just covered it all, and he's just done so much stuff. My introduction to Taj first came when I was in college. I had heard some of his stuff on his earlier rock records, but there was a track called Cakewalk Into Town that really, really blew me away, just with the tuba and the banjo and the hand claps, and it was just something that just blew my mind. And in 2006, I happened to get to talk to Taj on the phone for the first time through the Music Maker Relief Foundation's founder, Tim Duffy. He passed me Taj's number, and it's just a great pleasure to have him here. Thanks for joining us, Taj.
My pleasure, Dom. I'm really, really, really happy to be here.
Well, one of the things that's really amazing about your story, Taj, is of course, I'll mention this since my most recent recording I made was on Black Cowboys, and you are actually a cowboy by trade. You're a certified cowboy, and
yeah, I was definitely involved with the cows. Yeah.
And what's your title though? Because a lot of people don't know this about you.
Well, I was a farm worker, and then second I was a herdsman. And a foreman and a herdsman on 150 cow dairy. We had probably like about 70 milking, I think, at the top end of it, I was involved in agriculture, and that's how I got to go to university. And if I hadn't gone to the university, I probably would have played some other kind of music. But as soon as I found out that there were clubs that these people were playing in, and people were listening to Gus Cannon and Memphis Willie B, and people were looking to try to find Son House, who I never heard of. I know Muddy Waters, but I never heard of Son House nor Robert Johnson. And that's where I came across all of this stuff. I was like, wait a minute, somebody really thinks this stuff is really great. How come I don't hear this over in Springfield? None of that stuff came over to Springfield in the college town. You could go to the blues section, and it was who's who in blues.
That must have been an exciting time. And you got to meet a lot of the wonderful old blues musicians at that time.
Who's who in folk music? Like Mrs. Etta Baker. Well, Mrs. Etta Baker, she was one that I wanted to learn how to play like, you know, and then to eventually meet her and hook up with her. Like when I hooked up with her with banjo in the banjo convention in New Lebanon, Tennessee, it was the two guys from Philadelphia who were originally from North Carolina that came up to play at that. And then it was Mrs. Etta Baker, and it was Boseko Kuyate and myself. And we were the represented the African American, African and African American, contingent with about 300 or 400 banjo players.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that was the big banjo meltdown for the Tennessee Banjo Institute. Oh, man, I've heard the legends
amazing.
Of that one. And if people look online, they can probably find a picture of the panoramic of everybody. I mean, everybody from you and Boseko and Etta Baker to Tony Trischka to Danny Barker to Japanese banjo players. I mean, it was banjos on banjos.
Oh, yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about the banjo. Part of the thing that, I mean, I remember distinctly after Tim Duffy passed me your number after we'd gotten an album into you through the grapevine, and he asked me to call you. One of the first things you mentioned to me was how glad you were to hear and see a young black string band doing traditional music, because you had been holding the torch for so long as being a black performer that played the banjo and really embraced that. And I just maybe just expand upon kind of how you got into the banjo and then just a little bit about the importance of the banjo for black people and the story of its survival.
Yeah. So banjo for me was really an instrument that I did not like. I was never going to have a banjo in my hand if I could avoid it. All the pictures and caricatures and the minstrels, the blackface minstrels, you know, really basically seemed to be degrade the instrument. But the instrument itself kept, you know, would play, and there was something about it. I could not figure out it was. It would rattle in my bones, man, and I would go like, I don't know why I liked it. For as much as I disliked that instrument, I don't know why I'm out here, you know, 100% on the other side liking it. Sort of its tone, its sound, you know, wonder what else it could do. I also was playing in this kind of R&B band, a band called The Electrics. And we used to play, and we were playing at Amherst College, and we finished our set. And then a Dixieland band started in the next room. And I was really probably going to ignore it. Not so much ignore it, I would listen. But I wasn't paying a lot of attention to it. What happened was that the banjo soloist took off in playing Fly Me to the Moon. And I was like, wait a second. And, I mean, the instrument didn't have that kind of cranky, you know, sound that you normally hear with, say, the country music. So I went in there, and I saw it, and it was a wonderful African-American gentleman that was sitting there, and he had two banjos, and one of them had one of the knee levers on it that, you know, allowed you to muffle it. So that was what was helping getting a different tone out of the instrument. And he showed me his picks, and I kind of got a little bit better of a positive hit. I asked him a lot of questions, you know, and I could see he was well-dressed, and, you know, he wasn't just some kind of, ruffian playing this music. And he just said that, you know, in years before, he had mostly played with black bands, but a lot of people had stopped playing that kind of music. But he still liked it, and, you know, this group was a group that included, you know, mostly young white players who were excited about the music and excited about having him play with them. And he said it was an opportunity for him to get out there, aside from make some money, but to play the music that he really loved. And I listened to him, every break after that. That kind of like gave me a little bolster. And then after I just kind of said, you know what? That's when I started getting the information about the instrument having its African roots. And then it being, you know, created the way we knew it now, but it had some older, you know, I'll say, what is it? Is it an antecedent?
Yeah.
You know, it had older antecedents, and I had seen some of the pictures and stuff. So that piqued my interest more, that it wasn't just an American instrument. You know, okay. So this was something that people came through, and then the instrument changed, but they were still playing the instrument. And, you know, the tenor of the times was to look down on these folks. So, you know, the caricatures and all that stuff represented that. And that's not who it was or what it was, you know. So I got busy, you know, playing the instrument, and I didn't care who it killed or cured.
Oh, well, that's a beautiful thing, Taj. I mean, that's, you know, that was something distinctive that, you know, I was chatting it over with some friends earlier about how I really got into your music as, you know, as a young person of color, you know, or you're always looking for other people that have paved the way in a sort of way. And you're one of the people that comes up first and foremost for most anybody, whether they're into folk music or whether they're into rock music too. A lot of people always mention when they come to my shows about old folks at home and Take a Giant Step being like one of the first really monumental albums that got them thinking about that. I guess one thing, you know, when I called you, you were just so complimentary. I mean, it was one of the great moments of my life to get on the phone with you and you to lay a compliment on our group.
Well, you know, what happened was that I was late getting out to the bus. I think I must have been signing stuff or doing stuff or whatever. And so by the time I got out to the bus driver said, yeah, man, there was a young man that was hanging around here trying to catch up to you for a long time, and he left you this. And I kind of looked at the stuff and, you know, and looked at it and went like, okay, well, what's this? And then I got on the bus and, you know, turned on the DVD player and put the stuff in there, and my mouth dropped open and said, wait a minute. You mean to tell me these people have made a DVD already? A CD and a DVD? What is this? Who are these people? You know, I said, this is what I'm talking about. You know, we're talking about, you know, being proactive. I was like, wow, this is far out. You know, I mean, this is like exciting for me to know that this even exists, you know? So, this is it, you know. I mean, it's like, this is what, you know, years of doing what I've been doing, you know, has helped shepherd into the light. You know, I just thought that once somebody got to see, you know, this young group, that it would spark a whole lot of things in a lot of different directions, you know, and it did.
But yeah, you're one of the guys who's been leading the way for so long, Taj. I know that you're probably running out of time.
We'll have to pick this up again. I'm taking my leave now, and we'll do some more sometime soon.
Awesome, that sounds great, Taj. You're welcome on the show anytime. Thank you again for your time.
All right, you're welcome.
I'm going to close out today's show with a song. Now, this one here is a song called Charmin' Betsy, and I picked this one up from the great recordings of Henry Ragtime Texas Thomas, who recorded in the late 1920s. He was out of East Texas, and he played a special instrument called the quills. And so the quills are, they're like a panpipe, so it's a bunch of reeds placed one after the other, and they play a whole little scale. So you think of like Greek mythology and the little guy with the goat legs dancing around. That's the panpipes. And so they sound kind of like this here. You know, that's it, give you the idea. And then Henry Thomas, he just played on a standard guitar along with the quills. But for this arrangement here, I've brought in my good friend Big Head Joe, the gigantic six-string banjo. You know, if you think of a normal-sized banjo, the pot's about 11 inches big. And Big Head Joe is about an 18-inch inch pot, so it's about a 18 inches circumference of the diameter. So this thing really covers my entire torso when I sit down with it. And it's a six-string banjo, so it's tuned like a guitar. So it, but the sound is neither guitar nor banjo. Here, let me give you a little taste of it. So Big Head Joe has joined us in the studio this time to join me on this song, Charmin' Betsy. So we'll give you a little taste of Henry Thomas here. This one is dedicated to my good friend and mentor, Mike Seeger, who was the one who first got me really interested in actually playing quills compared to just listening to them. So here's a little bit of Charmin' Betsy.
I'm going round the mountain to believe. If I never see her no more, do Lord remember me? The first time I seen Charmin' Betsy, want everything that you see. Last time I seen Charmin' Betsy, she waving that ball and chain. Yes, I'm going round the mountain, Charmin' Betsy, going round the mountain to relieve. If I never see her no more, do Lord remember me?
American Songster Radio is a podcast recorded in the studios of North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC. This episode was produced by David Brower and Joe O'Connell. I'm Dom Flemons. Right on, man.